Case number 21-1272 et al. Duke Energy Progress LLC Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Zetlin for the petitioner, Ms. Pacella for the respondent, Mr. O'Connor for the intervener.
Good morning.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Misha Zetlin for Duke Energy Progress. In this case, FERC rejected our affected system operating agreement because that agreement did not require us, and thus our customers, to pay for upgrades necessitated and caused entirely by the needs of customers of a different utility. This court should vacate FERC's orders under review for three independent reasons. First and most obviously, the FERC orders here flout this court's decision in Baltimore Gas. In Baltimore Gas, this court held that the principle that FERC cannot treat a utility worse than similarly situated utilities without giving you a principal justification applies even when you're dealing with FERC staff orders, even where the FERC staff orders were uncontested at the time. Here, it is undisputed that FERC has approved multiple effective system operating agreements without the reimbursement requirement they faulted us for not requiring. It is uncontested that those utilities are identically situated in all relevant respects to us. FERC did not address at all or explain any reasoned way why it is fair to allow those utilities to not pay the reimbursement, but why we have to pay the reimbursement. That alone is clear error under Baltimore Gas and reason enough to reverse the orders on review. Second, even if this court wants to go beyond Baltimore Gas, and I think the court need not, given how clear that error is, those prior orders, those were correct. The only basis that FERC gives for rejecting our affected system operating agreement is that it somehow violates order 2003, but order 2003 only imposes its obligations through a provision, section 11.4 of the large generator interconnection agreement.
Now, let me ask you about this, because it seems like this argument that you're making now is in tension with a concession that you made in the FERC proceedings, which is noted at JA 268, which is the October 2021 order. This is the Edgecombe order, footnote 48. But at any rate, the same thing was pointed out in the October 2021 order, which was that when you filed a motion to dismiss in the agency proceedings of the Edgecombe, the first Edgecombe, action, I don't know the right terminology for all of these things in FERC, you agreed that order 2003 requires affected system operators to reimburse affected system customers for affected system network upgrade costs they pay up front. You agree that you said that in that proceeding, right?
I believe that footnote is referring to something we said in a different proceeding.
The first Edgecombe proceeding that got dismissed as unripe, you said that.
We certainly never took the position that when a affected system does not sign on to an LGIA, that it is bound to pay reimbursement. We never took that position. We certainly had, there were certain agreements where
I asked you whether you took the position that I just stated. You don't want to fight me on the hypothetical.
We did not take that.
I pulled the motion to dismiss off of the FERC docket.
You're saying you didn't say it? You did say it.
We did not take the position that...
Oh, no, that's not what the judge was asking you. Asking you, did you state this? We can fight over what it means, but I think you said it.
Well, I will take a look at that and I'll address on rebuttal.
Answer is you don't know.
I do not believe that
we are now resting on where Judge Wilkins is, which is you did assert it.
No. We certainly never took the position in these proceedings that that 11.4 applies to a effective system that that is not a party to the LGIA. We did not take that position. That is what I'm saying. I will take a look at what Judge Wilkins is referring to, and I will address it further on rebuttal as necessary.
I'm just going to be clear here. There's no need to be coy. I've got some very tough questions for FERC here about what they're doing and whether it's reasoned decision-making and whether it's consistent. And I don't think that this concession that you made is fatal to your position, but it just seems to be contrary to the point that you're arguing now, which is that, well, Order 2003 didn't really mean what it said because, you know, an affected system operator isn't a party to the, you know, the pro forma interconnection agreement that's appended to the order. That's all I'm saying is that legal argument that you're making now appears to be in tension with the concession that you made earlier. I don't think that it's a fatal concession. FERC does, I don't, but it just seems to be in tension with the position that you took previously.
As I said, Your Honor, I believe that throughout these proceedings, we've been consistent in raising the same arguments from the beginning, that if you're an effective system, that you're not a party to the LGIA, you don't have a 11.4 in any contract that you signed with the relevant transmission provider, you're not bound, but I will take a look at that and I will attempt to provide further elucidation on that in rebuttal. And I apologize if I'm not giving sufficient answers to that. To Your Honor, I will say that our position is not only consistent with FERC's actions in those three orders, it's also consistent with paragraph 25 of Midwest ISO, where they said, I mean, if you look at paragraph 25, they cite FERC cites paragraph 121 of Order 2003, make essentially the argument that we made in the American Beach proceeding, then the follow-on Edgecombe proceeding.
I take your point.
Yes, and then, yes, Your Honor.
So I guess what I see here that's really troubling me, and I'm going to get to this with FERC, is that FERC says in American Beach that you lose because you didn't really explain why an exception to the reimbursement rule from Order 2003 should apply in this case. I think in kind of layperson's terms, that's the way I read FERC's order. And they say that you didn't really provide, you know, sufficient evidence to justify an exception to the rule here. Let's suppose I'm inclined to. Well, why is that wrong? Why is that wrong?
Well, as a threshold matter, in all of those other materially indistinguishable cases, they didn't provide any more information than we did. This is an affected system. So that means that the upgrades, by definition, are being made just to accommodate and the needs and are caused by some other customers, not your customers. Then we gave a dollar figure, how much that is. I'm not clear what more we needed to say. I mean, this is the very definition of an affected system, is that you're not making the upgrades for yourself. You're making it to accommodate load that is serving somebody else.
Can I just understand something about the terminology? This affected system is outside the PJM interconnection area, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Can there be an affected system that is within the interconnection, or is the way that affected system defined, it's always outside of the interconnection area?
It's always a different transmission provider. Obviously, there's different ways that you know, various utilities and independent entities are organized. But if these folks were on our transmission lines, if they were feeding energy to us, you know, then they would be, then we would not be an effective system. Then we'd be an intermission provider. We have an 11.4 provision in our LGIA, and then, you know, then that would, you know, then we would reimburse them, but we wouldn't be an effective system. Here, we are an effective system precisely because we are, our customers' needs are not being served by these solar plants. Those are, that's Dominion and PJM.
So is there a mechanism for, the way I understand all of this is that a system upgrade that benefits, a system upgrade is called that because it benefits everyone within the system, right? That's why it, the entity that causes the need for the upgrade doesn't have to, is able to get reimbursed for it, for the cost of it, because it's benefiting everyone. It's not just benefiting the entity who is seeking the upgrade, right? And so the concern that I have seems to be the same one that your client had, which is that, well, if the people who are benefiting from the upgrade are the people within the PJM interconnection, why then does it look like the cost of that is going to either be borne by Duke or Duke's customers in North Carolina and South Carolina who aren't a part of the PJM interconnection and by definition aren't benefiting from this system upgrade?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And FERC 3 months ago was telling this court the same thing that Your Honor is saying, what we're saying in Lincoln. It was saying that it violates cost causation to force the folks in, you know, Region 19 there to pay for stuff that's not serving their customers. And what Lincoln had said in that case is, well, look, the entire network is a network, and so there are benefits. And what FERC said, and it was, you know, at, I went back and listened to the oral argument from Lincoln yesterday, and what they said at timestamp 14 is they said these kind of general network as a network benefits are not sufficient when you're dealing with cost causation. And they even cited the Seventh Circuit decision. I mean, they cited at oral argument the Seventh Circuit decision in Illinois Commerce Commission. And they said that's what the Seventh Circuit said to us in Illinois Commerce Commission, that that's not sufficient. And they referenced that at oral argument, you know, in the Lincoln case. And then they come here, they come at ours, and they're saying the exact opposite. They're saying, well, a network is a network, and we're all on the Eastern Interconnect, and so forth. So you get some kind of, your customers get some collateral benefits from these upgrades. To be clear, these upgrades were not going to be made if it wasn't for the fact that there was all these new solar generation popping up in northeastern North Carolina to serve the PJM system. We have a connection, an interconnection with legacy one with Dominion, and so this was overloading our system. It's not, if we didn't do those upgrades, it wasn't serving our customers in any way. It's serving the PJM customers. So what we said is, how is that fair? And that's our third argument. And they basically said, you need to make some heightened showing for it to be relevant. Well, that flips the cost causation principle and everything this court, what FERC told this court 3 months ago on its head. It's basically saying cost causation is presumptively irrelevant for effective systems, unless there's some heightened showing that FERC doesn't even explain what that is. I don't know what more an effective system can show than we're an effective system. So these upgrades are not for us. And the cost, that's $30 million, 70% of which is gonna be put down on our retail customers and 30% on our wholesale customers. That's the standard showing. That's what happened in all those other cases. And I'll also mention that FERC says that Order 2003 means this. They are unable to show a single effective system operating agreement that they've ever previously rejected for not having a reimbursement requirement. Not a single one. If Order 2003 means what they say, you'll be able to find some examples. In fact, every single example before this court in the record is the other way, is that they've always accepted these agreements, even if they didn't have when they didn't have reimbursement requirements. So we'd be the only ones that are treated worse, which is a plain violation of Baltimore Gas.
Can you address the mootness argument?
Right, so the mootness argument only applies to our American Beach proceedings. We think the American proceedings are not moot because if we obtain relief from those orders, we will withdraw the Edgecombe affected system operating agreement that we signed. So that's injury, that's causation.
Practical effect?
That's right. And
asking, what is that practical
effect? The practical effect is that we wouldn't need to pay the reimbursements because there would be no.
But I'm talking about in terms of the project.
Well, it would not go forward until we negotiate an effective system operating agreement. Now, of course, FERC since has now issued order 2023 that purports to have a pro forma affected system operating agreement for the first time. You know, we challenged that on rehearing, raising a lot of the same arguments that we raised here, and so we'll see how that works out. But in the meanwhile, if we are permitted to withdraw the Edgecombe effective system operating agreement, you know, we wouldn't have any reimbursement obligations. But in any event, this whole issue, you know, it's certainly obvious your honors need to say something about the American Beach proceedings in your opinion. But in terms of addressing the issues that we were discussing under this court's binding precedent, the fact that we raised all of the issues in the rehearing petition in Edgecombe means that they're all fairly before the court. And we cited four or five binding precedents from this court that say if you raise an argument that is not based on a new factual point, in a rehearing petition, that is sufficient to preserve the issue for review from this court. I don't know if FERC will even dispute that on a rebuttal, I guess, on their response. We'll see. But it seems clear that there's many binding cases from this court that show that.
FERC has acknowledged that it has made some errors with respect to its prior decisions. With respect to Baltimore Gas, I mean, if they've corrected those errors, are they supposed to go to new rulemaking or do anything different? In other words, they if they've corrected them, then is everything even now going forward, or is there some specific process that you expect them to go through?
You know, they need to do two things to comply with Baltimore Gas. First, they have to admit that they're changing policy. They tried to do this hand waving, saying we've been inconsistent. That's just not true. They have not been able to point to a single effective system operating agreement in the 20 years since Order 2003 is issued that they've rejected for a lack of reimbursement requirement, not a single one. So they would have to admit that they are changing policy. And having admitted that they're changing policy, then they have to explain why that's consistent with reliance interests and basic principles of fairness. Both basic principles of fairness of us vis-a-vis those utilities that did that were affected systems that didn't have to pay the reimbursements, and also fairness with regard to our customers. Why our customers have to be the first ones since Order 2003 has been around where FERC rejects their utility's submission of an affected system services operating agreement without a reimbursement requirement, and then FERC imposes one on them, and then they have to pay $30 million for upgrades that they would have not needed, but for the needs of PJM.
So American Beach withdrew from the executed agreement that was filed after. At what point did that happen?
I believe they withdrew on the same they declined to sign the revised affected system operating agreement on the same day that FERC issued its order addressing arguments on rehearing. So what happened is they had signed the prior one that didn't have the reimbursement requirement. We then worked with them to have one that did have the reimbursement requirement, and they decided we're not going forward, we're not gonna sign it. At which point Edgecombe said, we'll step into their shoes. And then we revised the agreement, which is just taking out American Beach's name, putting in Edgecombe's name, And then changing some of the dates. And then we submitted that unsigned, which is how you do it when you're doing something under protest, to FERC. And then we had the rest of the EDGECOM proceeding.
They used the word urged, but you took that as mandatory that you had to enter into a new agreement?
Yes, yes. There's language earlier in the initial October 1st order that says we have to do it. And they told us we got to do it post haste because they said you've been delaying this project unfairly, but that's what they said. And so you got to do it right away. So
where is this language that you're talking about that required?
It was JA211.
Which paragraph? 41?
I'm being told my colleague 41.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, we'll give you some time on rebuttal. We'll hear from Ms. Pacella.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. Beth Pacella for the commission. I think I'll start with the mootness question, if that's okay. The American Beach petitions are moot because under this court's case law, the petitions challenging those orders addressing contract no longer exist. These were separate proceedings here, as the commission found in the EDGECOM rehearing order.
But would you nonetheless say that the issue's been preserved because it was brought up in the American Beach proceedings and kind of followed throughout?
No, Your Honor, because they were separate proceedings. And let me explain that.
We're still on notice about this being an issue for them.
That's not how it works. As a proceeding is a body in and of itself. And just like in this court, a proceeding is a proceeding. And a separate proceeding, even if it involves the same type of issue, doesn't mean it's the same proceeding.
American Beach was dispositive of EDGECOM, and Duke was denied its preferred method. It's the same issue.
It is the same issue, Your Honor. I don't dispute that.
It's not moot. It's the same issue. No one is caught off guard. It's all in play. One case went to the next case, and the issue remained exactly the same, and the same affected party.
It's
now complaining before the court. This just does not fit the mootness.
I feel pretty confident about our merits, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but if I could just explain just one small point contrary to that, Your Honor, is that these are separate contracts with separate parties, and that is, it's just that contract was, it just doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't it exist anymore?
It doesn't exist because the commission in American, that just like, I guess your point is that the commission.
American Beach signed a contract that said no reimbursement requirement.
Right.
That got filed. The commission struck the no reimbursement requirement provision from that contract. Right. So the only reason this isn't a live controversy anymore is what? American Beach withdrew from that contract?
It's that contract just didn't exist anymore at that point. But
isn't it the case that proceeding is still a live proceeding because Duke disagrees with that ruling?
Because
how do you get to just like vaporize a contract and then say, well, this proceeding is moot now?
Because, Your Honor, a new contract, a modified contract, was presented to American Beach, and American Beach chose not to enter into that contract. If American Beach had entered into the contract.
And you asked Duke to do that.
Right. They're,
no,
they're,
I understand that, Your Honor.
I feel like they're under regulatory duress. Okay, we have to do
it. I understand that. All that, I'm not saying then it would be live and we would be defending the American Beach orders here. If that had happened, if that contract was never even presented to FERC, even unexecuted.
Legal disposition is at play now. FERC's position is exactly the same.
FERC's position isn't exactly the same because in the EDGECOM proceeding, what the commission had before it was a contract between Duke and EDGECOM in which reimbursement was provided. So the context of the case was completely different. in the American Beach proceeding.
It was provided under duress, not yet signed, was it?
No, that's right. It wasn't signed by Duke.
The objection remained. And so, okay, you're tying our hands, but we still object. We're not going to go on with this. We want to pursue the legal objection that we started out with in the first case.
And under this court's case law, it's not capable of repetition yet evading review because, as the court found in Southern Company Services and Entergy, the Edgecombe petition is live, and that's where it can be addressed. The commission's determinations regarding what Order 2003
means.
Now,
you're trying to suggest there was a voluntary secession. There wasn't any voluntary secession. That's what we should be looking at in the mootness doctrine. There was no voluntary secession by the agency on the rule that they are going to apply. And that's exactly what Duke is objecting to in both. You're on the wrong side of the mootness.
Well, I'll move on. I hear your point, Your Honor. Okay. So let me move on to next that what Order 2003 requires. Order 2003 requires both in the preamble of the rule and in Article 11.4 of the large generating interconnection agreement. That which the commission in paragraph 738 of Order 2003 made explicitly applicable to all affected system operators, that reimbursement must be provided for by affected systems. And this court's case law says that preambles have independent legal effect when the agency intends to bind regulated parties, and the language of the commission's rulemaking in the preamble makes that very clear. Paragraph 7.
Let's assume that's right. Okay. And I get your preamble. I do not mean to cut you off. I get your preamble.
It's okay. No, I appreciate that, Your Honor.
I get your preamble argument. The thrust of the argument here is you've never done this before, and you can't operate that way in a regulatory setting. No one else has been obliged to do what you're now asking us to do. And they're citing the prior case, I think I was on the panel, where the cost causation was the preeminent issue. And they're saying you flipped the focus with your interpretation of Order 203.
Are you talking about the Lincoln case, Your Honor?
Yeah, I guess
okay, so. Let me talk to you about Lincoln, which is completely in opposite here. Lincoln was involved completely different circumstances. In Lincoln, the facilities were already existing facilities.
I was on that, right?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Oh, all
were
right.
You? So you know this.
My memory only goes back 2 months.
So forgive me and let me just explain it. Of course, you can disagree with me if you want to. But that case involved legacy facilities, and legacy facilities are already existing facilities that were built solely for the benefit of specific customers. And then what happened was, Lincoln wanted to now transfer its interest in those facilities to a regional operator. I think it was Southwest Power. And under the commission's opinion 494 regarding legacy facilities and how those costs are allocated, the costs needed, it was a legacy facility, so the costs would stay with Lincoln. This is a completely different circumstance. The circumstances here are under Order 2003 requirements regarding interconnection facilities and network upgrades built in order to allow the interconnection to be built.
But the more
brand new facilities.
The more compelling point, which I want to hear your response on, is they're saying, get the Lincoln case, okay? Let's assume your explanation makes sense.
Yes,
and I'm recalling
yes,
it. This has never been required before.
The precedent is
completely off the wall insofar as they're concerned, and you don't ask people to do what you're now asking us to do, and it doesn't match up well with cost causation principles.
Until recently, Your Honor, no one has presented an agreement that didn't provide reimbursement, and that's because everybody understood, including Duke, for years, were always providing agreements with reimbursement because they understood that that's what Order 2003 required. It's only recently that anyone has brought up the notion 20 years after Order 2003, just the notion that reimbursement doesn't need to be required if the affected system doesn't enter into the interconnection
agreement. Let's suppose I agree with all of that. just to get to the brass tacks.
Yes, Your Honor.
Here's why I think you lose. Even if I accept all of that, what you said at JA 272, when I say you, your client, first, yes, paragraph 30, is that the reimbursement requirement of Order 2003 is not like unwavering and sacrosanct. FERC said that you could deviate from it, but it must be supported by the facts of the case, et cetera.
Right, and that comes out of Order 2003.
And you say that Duke has not provided such support here. You don't explain why they didn't provide that support or what they said that wasn't sufficient. I looked at their rehearing petition. I looked at the motion to dismiss that they filed of the unripe Edgecombe action. This whole case is about, you know, these generators foisting their costs of the affected system upgrades on people who aren't benefiting from the upgrade.
That's incorrect, Your Honor.
Well, that's the argument.
Well, they didn't make that argument.
That's the gist of the argument.
No,
that's not the gist. It's the explicit argument. That's the whole point of North Carolina intervening in this.
That's here on appeal. That is not what was presented to the commission below.
Presented to the commission was people outside the PJM interconnection are the ones who are going to have to pay for this, and that's not fair.
Well,
you would agree that argument was
they don't,
right?
They don't actually say, and that's not fair, but they do say we're going to charge our existing customers for this. But that's
they said it's not fair. They said that's not right. That shouldn't be done. In North Carolina, the North Carolina State Commission intervened to express its concerns. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to tell me that FERC wasn't put on notice that the whole issue here is that people outside the interconnection shouldn't have to pay for these affected system upgrades?
There's nothing in this record that talks about that there are no benefits. There's nothing in either record here that talks in which any party argued that there were no benefits. To the contrary, American Beach, their comment at JA 96 says that the network upgrades would benefit both American Beach and Duke's customers. So
I know that that's American Beach's argument, but what is
my point?
You concede, don't you, that North Carolina State Utility intervened and Duke made the argument that North Carolina and South Carolina rate-paying customers who are outside of the PJM interconnection shouldn't have to pay for these system upgrades?
They didn't argue that they shouldn't have to pay. What they argued was that they would have to pay. And that's all they said. They didn't say, and they shouldn't have to. They just said, we pose this because we don't believe we should have to reimburse it. And all they said in the American Beach proceeding, all they presented was
Well, why in the
all heck they argued?
Why in the heck would they even bring it up if they didn't think that it was a problem that these other people had to pay it?
Here's the point, Your Honor, and I hear what you're saying, but let me explain it this way. Order 2003 talks about, and this court has affirmed this, that network upgrades generally benefit all users of the transmission system. So these upgrades are built onto Duke's system, and they are real improvements. I mean, if you look at what these are, they're taking wooden things and they're turning them into steel, and they're replacing entire grid portions. So these are real improvements to the grid. And Order 2003 and this court's case law, it is black letter law that network upgrades generally benefit.
Okay, Duke maybe I can agree with that. But does Why couldn't it be a system then where PJM's customers pay for 50% of that upgrade and the North Carolina and South Carolina customers outside of PJM pay for 50%?
I have two responses to that, Your Honor. First is that was a determination made in Order 2003, and that's not before the court. I apologize. I understand that that's frustrating to Your Honor. But secondarily, as the commission explained in Order 2003, if an entity believed that its customers really would be actually harmed, and that's in the context of having talked about how network upgrades are beneficial to the entire system, to all existing customers, then they need to come in and they need to explain why. So what they could have shown, I mean, or tried to show, and apparently couldn't, because they never made a no benefits argument to the commission, never, not once, even though American Beach raised the point, as I said, that these were beneficial to the customers of Duke. They could have come back and said, no, they're not here, because again, it's only generally they're beneficial. Then they had the burden to come in and say why that's not true. And in paragraph 2000B, paragraph 56, the commission said, it's your burden to show why these are not, you should have a variance because there is actual harm to your customers. And all American Beach, I mean, all Duke did was come in and say, we're gonna charge these customers. And in the EDGECOM proceeding, they said, we're gonna roll in these costs so these existing customers are gonna pay. That's a given under Order 2003. The commission, that's exactly what the commission held. You have to do that. And the commission did it for good reason, because non-independent transmission providers like Duke have an incentive to discriminate against new generation.
But Duke says, look, American Beach, to get these upgrades done, they went before the North Carolina State Commission and said that North Carolina ratepayers aren't going to have to foot the bill for this. And they made that promise. And then they come before FERC and they essentially renege on that.
I think that was disputed on the record here, Your Honor. The commission did not accept their dispute because it just didn't matter. You know, the commission has a rulemaking.
Where did the commission rule on who was right about that factual?
The commission didn't rule on that because it was irrelevant. It had no bearing. The FERC has its jurisdiction and the state has its jurisdiction, and the state has siting authority jurisdiction, and they can decide whether something can be cited somewhere or not, but they can't decide whether FERC's rulemaking, which was affirmed long ago, they can't go contrary to that.
Well, Duke cites agreements that the commission has approved that did not have a reimbursement required. And one way that the commission deals with those is to say, well, this argument that you're making here wasn't presented in those cases, so those prior agreements aren't really relevant precedent.
The commission didn't really hold that here. It did something very different here. When the commission talked about the inconsistent precedent, the commission satisfied what Baltimore Gas requires, and it's very clear if you look at the Entergy versus FERC case.
Satisfied Baltimore Gas by citing Baltimore Gas with a but C.
It wrote in addition. That was in a footnote, and an in addition point. The commission's actual holding is in the text of the order, and the commission
point to me a page and a paragraph, please.
Oh, of course, Your Honor. The commission factually distinguished precedent Duke cited, and there's America Beach Order 210, note 62, and it set out it distinguished precedent that was distinguishable. It then said it acknowledged that its precedent was not entirely consistent regarding whether effective systems needed to reimburse interconnection customers. It pointed out, and that's at American Beach Order JA210, paragraph 37, and the hearing order JA271 to 72, paragraphs 28 to 29. It explained that some recent precedent Duke cited accepted agreements that did not provide for reimbursement. It further pointed out, but earlier commission precedent confirmed that order 2003 requires effective system operators to provide this reimbursement.
So where did the commission explain why it accepted the ones that did not require reimbursement?
The commission explained that it was erroneous. As the commission said, the determination here, like commission's earlier precedent, is consistent with order 2003's reimbursement requirements. That's American Beach Rehearing Order JA272, paragraph 29. That's the rehearing order. And the first order was JA210, paragraph 37. The commission explained that order 2003 permits the commission to accept an effective system operator agreement that doesn't provide for reimbursement only if either a generally applicable variation has been approved, like in the Midwest case, or if the effective system operator has met its burden to show here, in these specific circumstances here, that a deviation is necessary or appropriate in the circumstances.
So let me make sure I understand what you just said. To the extent that there were inconsistent agreements that had been approved, the commission said, that was just wrong. Those shouldn't have been approved.
That's exactly right. And the commission explicitly said that in the Edgecombe order. It explicitly made that holding when it said, and that's at Edgecombe hearing order JA 433 and 435, paragraphs 39 and 42. Orders that approved effective system operating agreements without reimbursement provisions were inconsistent with order 2003 unless that happened. So
it satisfies Baltimore Gas because you acknowledge that you had been, that the commission had been inconsistent in that it had made mistakes.
And
essentially the commission is saying two wrongs don't make a right.
Right. The commission reasonably followed its rulemaking. I mean, the commission can't, in individual adjudications, change what its rulemaking provides. So the commission said, oops, we're not going to follow that inconsistent precedent. We're going to follow all the consistent precedent.
Does the commission cite in the prior precedent some cases in which the showing of no benefits was made and the commission accepted it?
No.
I was trying to listen to your explanation of the prior cases. Were you saying some of the prior cases included situations where party came in and said no benefits here and therefore we should not be obliged to?
No, I don't know of it.
They're not relying on that.
On that
the
there
only
are
inconsistent precedent were mistakes.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
Everybody else you say
there's three orders in which the commission allowed this, and there's myriad orders for decades in which reimbursement was provided. Yes, practice was consistent. And in Entergy versus FERC 319F3rd 536 at 541 to 42, the circumstances are very much like here. There, the court found that the commission properly explained that a few orders had language, and there is even worse, that the orders had language contrary to the existing longstanding precedent. So the commission actually in those orders said something contrary, rather just made a quick ruling and directed language to be changed to be consistent with the longstanding policy. The court found that this was just clarifying inadvertent language in prior orders that violated longstanding policy. Here, the commission is just clarifying that those three particular orders are incorrect in light of Order 2003. And the court said, even if the commission's orders constituted more than a mere clarification of policy, the commission provided a reasoned explanation for its change in policy. So first of all, the commission just clarified its Order 2003 rule, what it requires here. But even if it had changed its policy, which it really couldn't in those individual adjudications,
you're discussing a lot of kind of case-specific deviation. But if you're being regulated, how do you know what circumstances the commission is looking at so that you can feel like you're actually following a precedent?
So if that's a fact case, fact-specific issue. So that's just how it's going to be, right? You have to show, based on the facts and circumstances in a specific case, why your existing customers are actually harmed, even with the presumption that they're beneficial.
Where's their guidance to the regulated party? I mean, is it just obviously looking at your prior orders, but it's so case specific that I don't know that they have.
Well, I don't think it would be, assuming there were something that they could say here, that all they had to do is say, here are the upgrades that are happening. They're not going to be beneficial to our, so not only are they going to be charged, but there's no benefit. Again, they never made that argument to the commission, even though Order 2003 repeatedly talks about that. And I could give you the cites for that. I think it's at least some are in my brief. But for example, Order 2003A, paragraphs 584 to 85 and 599, Order 2003, paragraphs 21, 65, and 694, all talk about how network upgrades are beneficial to all customers, not just customers for whom they're being built. And that is a different thing. The commission talked about how it understood that it's controversial to charge these customers for this, but the commission is doing it because it's concerned about these non-independent transmission providers and affected systems, which are just transmission providers, just the connection, interconnection is not to them, that they have this incentive to discriminate against new generation coming in. And also the commission talked about, which I talked about in my brief, the other reason is because the commission has wants to make sure that people can get new generation added onto the bulk power system, and that's beneficial generally, so we can have more generation on the system.
How is that consistent with the cost causation principle in the sense that affected system customers kind of, to the extent that maybe they benefit from the upgrade, but if it's not really an upgrade that they desired or that they wanted or that they were the cause of, they're still having to pay for it.
So even in the Lincoln case itself, the court also talks about the cost causation isn't just about who the facilities were built for. It's who the facilities were built for and who benefits from them. So that's just part of the analysis. That's always part of the cost causation analysis. But the commission also talked about, in Order 2003, how this court had affirmed the commission's point in earlier precedent, and then and so it was talking about in Order 2003 about the broader benefits. For example, at 2003A, paragraph 584, the commission talked about how its approach also recognizes the reliability benefits and more competitive power markets that result from a policy that facilitates the interconnection of new generation facilities, and that this approach was fully supported by the court in Entergy 319 F3rd at 543 to 44. So the specific, not only do these network upgrades actually just benefit the system because it creates more reliability, but it also helps create more generation getting onto the system, which is just innately beneficial. And the court has affirmed our cost causation determination to have reimbursement in these circumstances.
Has there done anything to just kind of rectify prior errors? You're explaining them away.
I don't know that the commission has done anything. I didn't check into that. And I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not sure what the commission could do. These are existing contracts and the commission made a mistake. I guess parties could come in.
Like making something beyond just conceding in orders and saying we're correcting that error.
The commission clarified what yes. Order 2003 means, and it did that in the American Beach order, and it's going to always follow that precedent going forward. And so a rulemaking isn't required to reimpose the rulemaking requirements. It's just the rulemaking requirements exist. And the commission's alternative was to continue to follow what it affirmatively found as incorrect precedent. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you here for counsel for intervener Edgecombe, Mr. O'Connor.
Good morning. May it please the court. Tyler O'Connor on behalf of Edgecombe Solar, joined by Holly Rachel Smith at counsel's table. I'd like to start with something that Duke's counsel was asked and responded to. And I'm just paraphrasing here, but Duke's counsel was essentially asked what happens to these projects if we were to vacate these orders. And I think Duke's counsel responded something to the effect of, well, these projects won't go forward until we agree to terms that we negotiate new terms. And I think that really gets to the heart of Order 2003 and what the commission there was trying to address. And it's exactly why their interpretation of Order 2003 would erect barriers to entry for new generation that is counter to both the text and the purpose of the order. And also, I will also address to the extent you have questions about benefits and explain how this does or would in fact likely benefit Duke system. But starting with the purpose, as this court explained in ESI Energy versus FERC 892 F3rd 321, prior to Order 2003, utilities that both generation and transmission would often favor their own generation by interfering with the interconnection of competing projects that they did not own. So Order 2003 basically creates an even playing field, and it sets out a standardized process that all transmission providers and affected systems have to abide by to prevent them from imposing onerous or burdensome or expensive requirements that would either delay or deny access to their systems. And one of those requirements is this reimbursement rule here. So Duke's argument that Order 2003 is voluntary, that it can abide by it or it cannot, is inconsistent, I think, with...
Let's suppose I agree with all of that. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
Please.
Why does it make sense in this case for affected system customers to have to pay simply the reimbursement to your client or to American Beach?
Yeah, I think there's two responses to that. First, as FERC counsel pointed out, there are benefits, or we don't know because there's no record, frankly, but you can presume some benefits from the types of upgrades that are being effectuated here. For instance, replacing wooden poles with steel poles. We're all very familiar with wildfires and the extreme weather that has happened to take down transmission lines across the country. That is an upgrade that would presumably benefit Duke system. Now, Duke never contested as to whether it made that point, so my client never had the chance to respond. But another benefit from these types of projects, I think Judge Wilkins, not to directly disagree with something I believe you said, but you said by definition, they aren't benefiting. Duke is not benefiting by definition of being an affected system. And so not only is that not right with respect to these particular upgrades, But in fact, there are interregional power transfers all the time. And Duke is well aware of that. And I candidly don't know if it's this Duke or one of their affiliates, but during Winter Storm Elliott last year, when power was knocked out in the TVA region and in Duke's service territory, it was generators in PJM who actually shipped power across regional lines to make sure that more people didn't lose power in those regions. And there have been very extensive FERC cases about that. And so there are benefits, or we believe there are benefits. And I think that goes to the question you have here, or what we've been talking about at length, which is, what was Duke's obligation to establish that those benefits, which the commission in order paragraph 21 of order 2003 said accrue, they said transmission system benefits, network upgrades. It is called an upgrade for a reason. It is presumed to benefit the system. What's happened here, you know, Duke has tried to articulate this case as if we're requiring Duke to pay for something, on their system. What's actually happening is my client and the other interconnecting generators are fronting the cost to improve Duke's system. And then the policy permits Duke to reimburse it over time. Now, in order 2003B paragraph 56, the commission laid out a fairly extensive showing that Duke would have to make to it's a rebuttable presumption, right?
Which paragraph are you talking
about? I believe it's order 2003B paragraph 56. It's a rebuttable presumption. Nobody says, there's explicit language that says, look, you can seek an exception or a deviation from these requirements if you believe that it's not good for your native load, which is just FERC geek word for, you know, your customers. It goes on at length about how the transmission provider must explain the facts of the case, the assumptions on which its calculation is based, and provide evidentiary support. And it says it bears the, quote, full burden of showing that such proposal is just and reasonable and is appropriate under the circumstances. There's no, I mean, the bald recitation of the fact that you're an affected system that will be bearing the cost of the upgrades is itself tautological. Yes, we know that you did not, were not the but-for cause of these upgrades. That's why you're an affected system. FERC knew that when it issued the order. If you want to seek a deviation for it, you're welcome to, but like everybody else, you have to plead the facts. And I would reference one of the cases cited, and I'm sorry, I'm sure I can find this, the exact citation. It's the Midwest ISO case. It's cited in the briefs, and I can, if you'll permit me, I can find the actual.
The one from 2007?
Oh. Of course, yes, Your Honor, I believe that's right. Let me have it here. Yes, 120 FERC, 120 FERC 61066. And I only point to that case because the transmission system in that case sought a deviation. That case is really about which of two tariff provisions applies, an earlier time or a later in time. But an underlying fact in that case is that the transmission system had sought and obtained a deviation from the reimbursement requirement. And I think the deviation said, henceforth, 50% of the costs will be borne by these people and 50% will be borne by these people. And I think what it illustrates is that how based on the basically, I'm sorry, my time is long since expired, so please.
Continue.
Thank you. I think my point here though is 50-50 is a conclusion that you could only derive through the use of facts and assumptions to apportion out which benefits apply to this person and which benefits apply to this person. But Duke has made no showing as to which benefits apply to which party or accrue to which party. And they don't even attempt to do that. So of course, my client and never had the opportunity to respond and point out that in fact, some of these benefits clearly would accrue to Duke system. Perhaps that's the reason they never made the argument. That is just conjecture.
What do we do with the fact that the commission says, well, we did act inconsistently in these other prior, by approving these other prior agreements, but you know, that was then, this is now, those were wrong. And you know, we think that those agreements shouldn't really be considered because you know, the challenge that American Beach is, I'm sorry, that Duke is making now wasn't really made and litigated in those prior agreements, proceedings, but see Baltimore Gas. What are we supposed to do with that?
Yeah, I think I would say two things. This gives me an opportunity first to point out there's been some parties up here seem to be contesting whether this has been a longstanding policy. And Judge Wilkins, I think you pointed to an instance in which Duke itself has acknowledged this policy. I would also point you to page 8 of the intervener brief in a footnote where we cite multiple instances in which Duke and Duke's affiliates, they own power companies across multiple service territories, have repeatedly filed affected system agreements with this reimbursement language. So, and so to your specific, and in fact, you know, you had referenced one of their quotes. They've got another one here, an affected system operator, just like a transmission provider, must provide the 20-year lump sum reimbursement to refund any remaining balance, even if no transmission service was taken. And so your question here is about what to do with these three letter orders and how to treat them. I think the council had it right, which is there's no principle of administrative law that I'm aware of that says that FERC was required to continue perpetuating its mistakes. In fact, rightfully returning and applying a longstanding rule is a hallmark and obligation of reasoned decision-making. Departing from a longstanding rule because you had a case where you also departed from a longstanding rule, I think would be arbitrary and capricious under these court's rule, or under this court's precedent. And not only that, as FERC's counsel pointed out, Order 2003 was a notice and comment rulemaking. Duke's contention that the substance of that rule was reversed by three uncontested letter order adjudications sub silentio runs afoul of like multiple different administrative law principles.
Well, I don't think that that's their argument. Their argument is just simply that like cases should be treated alike. That's what Baltimore Gas stands for. And, you know, their case is like those three cases, and the commission hasn't explained why it's not treated the same as those three cases.
And I with respect to Your Honor, I think it does explain why, and I think it points out that those cases contravene an existing rulemaking. And because an adjudication issued without an unreasoned letter order cannot overturn a notice and comment rulemaking, they're obliged by administrative law principles to apply the rule. And even if that weren't the case, I think FERC does provide a reasoned explanation for why its interpretation, even assuming arguendo that these letter orders could have overturned a notice and comment rulemaking, I think it provides a reasoned explanation why it would be creating or establishing a new policy in this case, which is to say, you know what? We've read those. They're inconsistent with what Order 2003 says because it found that affected systems have an incentive to frustrate, affected systems like Duke have an incentive to frustrate new generation. And we think here it makes sense to have a reimbursement requirement for that reason. And if Duke would like to plead itself out of that reimbursement requirement, it's welcome to put forward facts that would do so.
Now, the facilities were located elsewhere, but there were upgrades actually on Duke's system. And so do you believe FERC was evaluating whether the solar facilities or the upgrades on the system benefited Duke's customers? Or is there a difference?
I'm sorry, I apologize. Would you mind restating the question?
Yes. So you have the solar facilities, they're located elsewhere.
Right.
But then the upgrades are on Duke's system. So when FERC is doing this evaluation, do you think that they're evaluating benefits in terms of the solar benefits located elsewhere or Duke's upgrades on its own system? Or is there some difference in that?
You're saying if they were to request a deviation, I'm sorry, if Duke had requested a deviation and substantiated it with evidence, but how would FERC have evaluated it?
Well, just when they're suggesting that there should be reimbursements, is there a consideration that some of the solar facilities are located elsewhere?
Sorry. Okay. Yeah. So in Order 2003, the commission evinces a clear understanding that projects located elsewhere can have impacts on other systems. But there are many reasons for the commission's policy. I think, you know, first of all, in this country, for most of this country's history until the 1970s, we had a utility model. Every utility had its own service territory. And good luck, you know, good luck going up against your utility. What happened, though, was there started to become a competitive generation industry in this country. And FERC found in Order 2003 and in Order 888 in I believe, 1996, and prior to that, that competitive generation increases energy supply, it promotes reliability, and it can lower wholesale power prices. So we found that there were really important nationwide reasons for promoting the development of this industry. But a corollary is, okay, how do we promote a competitive industry when we have incumbent utilities who basically have every incentive to frustrate the people who are trying to compete with them? And so I think when to your point, this, to your broader point about benefits, I think they were both recognizing that there are systemic nationwide benefits undergirding its policy, but to the extent an affected system would not reap those benefits or would not, or its customers would be harmed by them, it gave Duke an opportunity, it gave all affected systems an opportunity to make a showing that in this case, the harm suffered by its customers essentially would exceed the benefits that would otherwise accrue from this policy. I hope that answers your question. I'm happy to give it another shot if.
Thank you. We have
thank you.
Council for petitioner, we'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly responding to Your Honor's question at JA 211, paragraph 38, FERC says that the arguments in the Edgecombe complaint are outside this proceeding. I took a look again at what we filed there. I think it's fair to say that our arguments were not as fully developed as they were as we went through the American Beach and the Edgecombe proceedings. We say on one page the language that you quote. On the next page, we say nothing in Order 2003 frustrates freedom of contract. So I think it's fair to say that in that motion dismissed, we hadn't fully developed the arguments that we had in the orders actually on review. And then that brings us to Baltimore Gas, is that we and our affiliates don't have some APA obligation to make consistent arguments in every proceeding we participate in. But FERC, when it issues orders, has to treat like cases alike. They say, oh, you know, this is just three orders. Three orders is how many there were in Baltimore Gas. They have not pointed to a single affected system operating agreement without this reimbursement requirement that they've ever, ever rejected.
The Baltimore Gas was a circumstance where the orders that were cited were the only orders, and they all favored the petitioner.
Right. And that's the case here.
But here FERC is saying, well, we have dozens and dozens of orders that had reimbursement requirements. And yes, you can cherry pick three that we approved that did not, and those were wrong, but reasoned decision-making isn't like perpetuating an error. It's explaining that those were wrong and then doing the right thing here. So this isn't really Baltimore Gas.
Nobody.
I want to echo that too. I mean, you're trying to ride this Baltimore Gas horse much too much. It doesn't get you there. It just doesn't. It's a completely different case. Here you have many, many orders, as Judge Wilkins has said, that are perfectly inconsistent with your position. But more importantly, the rule that's applicable here is perfectly inconsistent with your position. You're not challenging the rule. And the rule makes it clear that you have the burden to show no benefits if that's what your argument is. And you have not met that. So I don't know how you can possibly prevail in this situation. Baltimore simply is off point. It really is.
Well, I saw
the agency supposed to do it. They have hundreds of cases that follow the rule consistently and known as claiming otherwise, and three times they fouled up. Okay, they did what they did. We fouled up three times, but the rule is still the rule. And you're not challenging the rule.
We certainly have a different reading of the rule, but they and I very strongly disagree. They have zero examples of them ever rejecting a single affected service operating agreement for failure to have reimbursement. Not dozens, literally zero. The only ones, the examples they cite are entities, including some of our affiliates, that voluntarily assume the obligation to pay reimbursements. That is entirely consistent with our position. Nobody has ever argued that you can't, that an affected system can't, because it's of its own interest.
The rule is clear in what it requires.
Yes, Your Honor.
The rule requires what they're saying. And the preamble is absolutely clear, and the preamble counts, and it's inconsistent with your position. And all they're saying is, we're applying the rule, and you're right, we missed it three times, but there are many times where the parties affected, whether they did it voluntarily, I don't even know what that means. If there's a rule that says you have to do X, and then you self-servingly say, well, I'll do it voluntarily. But the fact is you did it, and there was a rule that required it. That's what FERC is saying. There has been consistent practice that follows the rule. That kills your position.
Well, I strongly disagree with, taking a clue from you, I would, if I could have a minute to talk about cost causation was just a completely separate argument. It doesn't rely on Baltimore Gas. What everything that FERC and Edgecom told you this morning, that's the exact position that was urged by Lincoln. That's the exact position that the Seventh Circuit rejected in Illinois Commerce Commission. And in Lincoln, FERC stood at this podium 2 months ago and said, pointed to the Seventh Circuit, said we can't rely on these general system benefits to swamp cost causation. You know, they've got this point where once in a while there might be some problem in our system. We might draw some energy from PJM. That's exactly the argument that was
what FERC said in that case, as I'm now remembering it, we're following the rule regarding legacies. That's what they said.
No, what they said.
Just following the rules.
No, they said, because Lincoln had argued that there's going to be system-wide benefits.
Well,
and they said,
respectfully, what FERC's position was in that case is there's a rule regarding how we treat legacies, and this person fits, this group fits it, and that's that. We're going to follow that rule.
What FERC said in that case is that cost causation is a requirement of the Federal Power Act. And so we have to honor that. Here, they are flipping it completely on its head. They're saying unless you make some heightened showing that these upgrades are somehow going to hurt customers by degrading our system or something, we're going to give cost causation zero weight.
This case about challenging the efficacy of 2003, the rule?
No, you're
right.
Wrong.
The rule applies, right?
Sorry?
The rule applies, right? Oh. You're not challenging the legitimacy of Order 2003, are you?
We have a different reading of Order 2003, but we have two independent arguments, even if Your Honors do not agree with our Order 2003 argument. I understand that Your Honor doesn't agree with our Baltimore Gas argument. The other argument is under the Federal Power Act and standard APA decision-making, they have to address reasonably a relevant aspect of the problem. They didn't address reasonably at all cost causation. They basically said cost causation is going to be completely irrelevant unless you make some unspecified heightened showing.
You're trying to challenge Order 2003. Is that what you're trying to do? Is that how this case is now framing up?
Absolutely, absolutely not, Your Honor. Although I will say that the principle that you shouldn't read Order 2003 to conflict with what this court just said a couple of days ago, what the Federal Power Act requires as a matter of avoidance, is certainly open to this court. That wouldn't at all challenge Order 2003. That would just be a reading Order 2003 not to conflict with the Federal Power Act, which would be necessary because if you're in their reading of Order 2003 is correct, the cost causation is presumptively irrelevant, which is contrary to what this court said a couple of days ago the Federal Power Act requires.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.